Welcome to Ever Beyond, Beyond. On Wolf Spirit Radio, No Borders Radio, and everbeyond.info. Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond, And good evening, good afternoon, good morning, wherever you are on this spinning little globe, plummeting around the universe, schlepping behind this great big star that's going around the Alcyone system. So, welcome to Ever Beyond. We are here on the 1st of February. Pinch Punch is the 1st of the month. Ow! And I'll be joined... by Mr. Bill Moore, today we've been talking about these things. There's been various other elements to this, but I've been playing some archives about the idea of the Super Bowl ritual. And what I thought I'd do is I'd invite Bill and anybody else who wishes to join to look at the occult aspects of what is going on today. Tonight, hang on, I'm just going to, I just want to welcome the other group here. And there we go. Yeah, and now welcome to the Scottish Sovereigns listeners. This is Ever Beyond, and tonight we're going to be dealing with the satanic ritual aspect of the Super Bowl and other public rituals that you will see on your local television. So, without any further ado, I'd like to introduce my guest, guests. They're together. Two minutes separated. Actually, you two are going to be separated by time because my guest is listening live, and his wife Janet is listening 2 minutes time. So, hello, future Janet. So, so welcome on, Bill Moore. Good afternoon. How are you?
I am doing good, and howdy you all to everybody out there from a big howdy you all from Texas.
A big howdy. So Texas, yeah. So the Super Bowl, it seems, I mean, like, I'm a Brit, right? So you have to kind of excuse me. I don't even understand the rules of baseball. We have a game called Rounders in Britain where you play it with a stick like that. I'm not sure if it's the same thing, because all these bases and things, and am I actually talking about baseball, or is it football? Is it like rugby? Have I got the other one? Is it the wrong game? See, that's how stupid and ignorant I am. So let's just start from this baseline. I am very, very ignorant about the actual game that is in the thing. So do you want to explain the game to me? Just as an alien. If I just landed on your planet, what do you do this thing for?
Well, let me put it this way. My 14 years of living in England, I did become slightly familiar with rounders, and the joke in America, at least with Jan being British, is, why do they call in baseball at the World Series when, in actuality, only American teams can play? Which is a good question. And it is very similar to rounders. In football, it's probably most closely related to rugby. I hate to say it, I'll probably be run out of the country, but it's kind of like a bunch of sissies playing rugby, because they all put on padding and helmets and everything else, where in rugby they just go for it, as it were. The thing about the Super Bowl is it works, I guess, somewhat like the World Cup, in the fact that it plays down through teams, and everybody gets more and more excited as it gets closer to the end of seeing who the team is going to be that plays. Now, I actually quit watching football about 5 or 10 years before I moved to Britain, so it's probably 25 years out. However, this year, because my ranch foreman follows football, I've kind of kept up on the website with the standings so I could at least speak intelligently to him and say, oh, I saw that the Dallas Cowboys won this weekend or whatever it was. And I kind of watched the standings through the playoffs down to the Super Bowl. The thing about the Super Bowl, I think that is becoming, as you defined it, probably ritualistic, is it is a massive opportunity with 100 million estimated viewers, the highest advertising cost on television in America. It is probably the best opportunity for two things. One, the global elitists to make money off of their products because only they can afford the expensive commercials. And two, it is also a great opportunity for things like the Super Bowl halftime show to feature more or less the Illuminati agenda, ritualistic type programming and shows. And that's why they've chosen people in the past like Madonna and put on these very, for lack of a better word, satanic Illuminati ritual type presentations, and followed them through. I just noticed earlier on the pregame show of this one that this year's feature is Katy Perry, and she's pretty well known to be, one of the sweethearts of that group. That, so I'm sure the halftime show will have an awful lot in it. And I think any of your listeners, Jay, with, being an intellectual radio show, are going to be pretty well clued up that television itself is probably one of the greatest brainwashing tools there is, that with subliminal messaging and whatnot. So the big $64 question that, of course, none of anyone watching it sees is what's really behind the screen, unless you're capturing some of those occasions when somebody takes a snapshot or something and it actually freeze frames something that's in the background, which is rare, but does happen. So that's in a lot of words, probably a little bit about what it's about. I hope I came close to what you were looking for. If not, ask me to clarify.
Well, Bill, that's a good overview from your perspective with what you've got. So let's add some stuff to the pot here, because we get to knowing the truth by bringing together different angles of research, and mm-hmm. one of the angles is that is to see it not in just the terms of this one event, this, you know, the Super Bowl Sunday. But there are events that happen before and happen afterwards. And that they are to be taken as a whole. And you can see, when you start zooming out like this, that there's always a celebrity death and a weird Super Bowl thingy, you know, middle show. Something is weird, something is awkward, something is and then you got the Grammys and all those things. Same thing goes on. There's a celebrity death, there's the ceremony, and this weird awkwardness. And these are moments, these are portals where energy is harvested to open gateways to for beings to come through who are shouldn't supposed to be here, kind of thing. But what we discovered is that if you figure it out, if we figure it out, if people figure it out, and see it for what it is. The portal snaps shut again. But it's only if people don't know about it that the energy can be harvested. When people start seeing that they're, oh, hang on a second, oh, I don't like that. I'm you know, that people switch off as soon as they see something kind of horrible, instead of being glued to it because of the brainwashing addiction that they have. So I think that's the first thing that we can kind of pray or hope for today, is that here's the thing, right? Last year it was Whitney Houston, wasn't it? This year it was Whitney Houston's daughter, still found in a bath under mysterious circumstances. You know, there's sympathy that pours out, and there's confusion, and that is used to kickstart the ceremony. What do you think of that?
Well, I think it's a very interesting perspective, and I have no doubt that there's incredible validity in what you're saying. I mean, the average, and it's really fascinating to me, because I have a friend in England from when I lived over there that worked for me in one of the projects I was doing. It is very much brainwashed into believing organized religion, believing the TV, believing the politicians, etc. And she just cannot see anything in the very blatantly obvious. When I say that, she would read the Illuminati website that I've spent the whole day on reading, and she would just read it with all the sugar coating that it's disguising what's really being said there, that anybody that, you know, knows about these things could sit there and go, wow, you know, I see some real dark issues here. In fact, Nancy sent me a message just before the show saying that she went on the site to look at it and made her nauseous. And so it depends on who's looking at it and from what perspective. I was married to a British physicist, and a Newtonian physicist, for 13 years. And when the CERN project came online in Switzerland, I mean, her perspective of it was the greatest thing going. When you look at the quantum physics and what you're talking about, opening gateways and whatnot, and then you sit and read the reports of CERN being fired up and running, you know, full tilt, and unknown beings starting to appear, and the phone lines being swamped with calls of, you know, giant beings and what have you, showing up all over everywhere. To some people, you know, they, as you said, I think the word confusion comes in there. It's like, what's this all about? Are people, you know, delirious or, you know, delusional or whatever the word would be. But in actuality, anybody that's, you know, been doing a little bit of digging in this says, hey, wait a minute, you know, there's something in this picture that is much bigger than what we are programmed to believe. And of course, that's something Jen and I talk about with A Smiling World and what have you. We believe that awareness is the first step to conscious creation of, you know, a stronger and better outcome and a more positive outcome. But if people aren't aware and they don't realize these rituals are opening up these gateways, or they're feeding the energy on it, I totally relate to what you're saying. When Robin Williams died or was killed, whichever way it turned out, was, you know, very much the same thing, very dramatic reaction. Of course, I was at John F. Kennedy's speech the morning he was assassinated. I know how the mood shift of that day went, even though I was only in eighth grade at the time. I know how the mood shift of the day went. I know how the mood shift of the day went when they blew up the Challenger shuttle. I know how the mood change went with 9/11, because I was in the Shropshire Council offices there in England the day 9/11 happened, and even British citizens had a range of emotions from shock to actual panic, literally, like running around the desk, oh my God, what's going to happen now? And, you know, of course, you compound that, America, you know, just marched right off to war on that and bought into the whole thing for quite some time before people started realizing that that was entirely done as a an inside job. And I hadn't really thought about it until you just said it, Jay, but that quite possibly could have been very much a opportunity to open one of these gateways, as you said. HeartMath in California, one of the speakers at our Festival of Enlightenment was Howard Martin from HeartMath, and they have a thing, if I recall correctly, it's called the Global Something Initiative. Anyway, it's a division of HeartMath, and they study the effect on the ionosphere by human emotions, and when something dramatic happens, like 9/11, what they found is even their early station, the first one out in Saudi Arabia, found that the ionosphere actually was, I believe, contracting when the world suddenly went into a panic or a despondent mood, and its blocking of the sun's rays became much less effective. So in other words, you know, the planet's energy goes down, the sun is cooking us more so and causing the problems that, you know, too much radiation from the sun causes. And vice versa, when the mood goes up, it, you know, creates a more positive and a stronger ionosphere. Well, the powers that be that are behind any of the satanic or Illuminati or what have you rituals, which probably, in my personal opinion, probably one and the same, know that this is exactly where that energy feed, exactly where any gateways would open. It's like I always tell people, you know, they say, wow, the more I get into quantum physics, the more I understand I can create any outcome I want by focusing, you know, on the outcome, and it's a little more detailed, but not focusing on the problem, focusing on the outcome. I can create any outcome I want. And, but when the naysayers get in there and say, yeah, but what about this or what about that? It's like I've said many times before, those powers that are opening gateways or those powers who are working towards that enslavement, they know more about the quantum physics and how it works than 99.9% of the rest of us, because they're leveraging the dark side of all of it much harder and much faster than generally speaking the rest of the world is doing. But as you said, and as Jan and I focus on the attention of the awareness, is as long as we can create awareness and create the focus on positive outcomes, we can keep entities of dark energy, dark whatever you want to call it, that are not here for our best interest, at least at bay. That I think is extremely possible. But it does take, they claim, and I say they because I don't know the specifics. I generally have gotten the information, but there is a claim that it only takes about 10, 11, 12% to turn a tide in the quantum field, and that that tide can actually overrun, sort of like a tsunami, build and overrun a negative energy. And I tend to believe that. But you know, when you focus on 1% of the world having 99% of control and money and everything else, it's pretty blatantly obvious that they have something going on that is much, much bigger than people who are just mind-numbed into watching the Super Bowl commercials and going, wow, I think I'll buy a Chevy truck, or, boy, I tell you, Katy Perry sure can dance around, and they're missing all of that in the background that is the ritual. But as Roger Waters said on his Radio Chaos album, the tide is turning, and I truly believe that. So I keep smiling and keep focused on the fact that if those doors are opening, what can we do to keep that awareness right there in their face, that if they're going to be open, we're going to kick them right back shut.
Well, yeah, lots of doors going in and out at the moment. But, that's a great track. I'll be putting that on at the top of the hour there, Bill, because, I do like Pink Floyd, and I love Roger Waters. As you know, his part in Pink Floyd, that was the rebel. He speaks for the rebel in everybody, I think.
Amen. Yeah, they were an interesting band. I saw them when they previewed Dark Side of the Moon, and before it came out, on stage in a little auditorium, probably 300 or 400 people, and on up through their stadium tours. And between the musical genius of David Gilmour and the writing capabilities of the verbal expression of Roger, they did speak a lot of truth. Unfortunately, the music industry is also polluted by those who would create those images and what have you to open those gateways you speak of and do the ritualistic ceremonies. But I don't think all musicians are that way. There's an awful lot of them that stand right smack in the face of it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it just seems to be like, there are things that ride on the light, rides on the dark, rides on the light, rides on the dark, you know. So it all comes as a kind of big mix. Like, we know that there were some great things that happened in the great gatherings like Woodstock and Live Aid, but we also know that there's also sort of there's the guys in the suits are standing around, you know, thinking, ah, oh, they sort of organized it, didn't they, kind of thing, and manipulating the our minds behind it to try and corral the human mind into thinking that the world is built one way, whereas actually we have a lot more control over the outcomes these days, even to the point of being able to observe a magical ritual going on and prevent it from coming to fruition, as we hope to do today.
Yeah, and some of the ritualistic things, I think a lot of people don't really understand the ritualistic things that happen that aren't necessarily just evil, you know, opening evil gateways, but just literally opening a brainwashing to a classification of thinking. I just was watching, I have the Super Bowl on right now, on mute, and I was just watching the young lady, whoever it was, singing the Star Spangled Banner. And then there was a flyover of fighter jets. And I think a lot of people don't stop to think what's being programmed into, you know, people's thinking. Because the fighter jets represent military might, and they represent dominance. And Jan and I just had a conversation this morning about the irony that could exist, and this is just a hypothetical, but the irony that could exist, excuse me, just one second. Sorry, I lost my voice there. That could exist if the Illuminati was to completely successfully follow the Georgia Stones and reduce the world population as they promised to do down to 500 million, take over complete control. The irony that would happen if the actual alien connection that quite possibly exists and controls them turned around at that point and said, okay, we don't need you any longer.
Or it might have already been gone. And part of the reason that we're not seeing it is because that influence has actually disappeared, and people are going to witness the Emperor's new clothes for themselves. That would be interesting, wouldn't it? If the entire alien glamour was suddenly actually not there like it was last year. That something is like, people will go, you know, somebody might say, hang on, that's a load of rubbish. That's rubbish. I'm not having that. And people start throwing things, you know, throwing cups. That'd be funny, wouldn't it? If there was a real uprising or an uproar at these events.
Yeah, we were speaking about Roger and musicians. Another favorite of mine that Jan and I are going up to Colorado to see soon is the Moody Blues. And Justin Hayward, in one of his songs, quoted the line, "There are none as blind as those who shall not, who will not see." And, you know, that is, of course, one of the beautiful things about, like, talking to you on the radio show and what have you, is we all can provide our perspectives and chat about different ideas and even get new insights and new ideas and enlightenment from these things. But when you run into one of the completely mind-numbed, brainwashed, programmed people who just buy into, you know, what's being put in front of them, they don't see a lot of it, or don't even, I guess what I should say is, you know, maybe they can't see it, but the point is they just don't want to know. It's kind of the head in the sand syndrome. Rather than saying, oh, well, you know, maybe I don't totally agree with that, or maybe I don't understand it, but, you know, why not? Why couldn't that possibility exist?
We are in a universe of infinite possibilities.
Absolutely. And something that just came up in Jan and I's discussion this past week or so also is, I think actually Nancy may have introduced us to this, was that the possibility of multiple timelines running at the same, no, it might have been Dolores Cannon, sorry, of multiple timelines running simultaneously. And I remember in London when I first introduced Jan and I had dinner with Joe Dispenza of the movie What the Bleep Do We Know, which I always say is a great layman's movie to watch and see how the quantum field kind of works in simple layman terms. But Joe, I've been to some of his things, and he's really brilliant on the brain and neuro pathways being reopened and what have you. But I know when Jan and I had dinner with him, I took her to his workshop that day. And during the workshop, Joe expressed something about life being somewhat like a spindle in the olden days before they outlawed everything that might be considered dangerous. I remember we used to have these little things that sat on your desk, which had like three little feet or something on a little coil, and there was a stick sticking up in the middle, and you just had a sharp point on it, just stick papers down on it with your little notes and reminders and a stick file or what have you. And Joe was talking about how the quantum field works somewhat like that. Again, his perspective, but I thought it was a really interesting perspective, that it was like an elevator running up that spindle. And we're all running an elevator, and all time is one time. And we're just choosing what floor we want to get off on at a particular moment. So that the fact is everything's happening at once, and we're just choosing what floor we want to get off on. And that's where I think a lot of people, you know, do tend to miss what's happening. The important thing, though, is as you said, is I really think it is important to, however it is, whether it be the CERN super collider running and actually opening Stargate-type situations where beings are coming through or what have you.
That, there's one coming through now.
Yeah, sorry about that.
It's the Stargate.
But whatever it is, if we can, if we can create awareness and say, until we know unequivocally that this is for the true good of all humanity, you know, we're going to just keep this closed, you know. We're just going to take this one step at a time. Because it's like that Illuminati website. I've copied a line of text out of it. And if you just read it and step back, it's just all sugar-coated and everything else. But it clearly states that if you don't follow the doctrine, it doesn't word it exactly that way, but it clearly states if you don't follow the doctrine that they want you to follow, there is no use for you. In other words, you're expendable, collateral damage, just like the people in 9/11. And that is a bit troubling. And they also talk about they have no religion. And another point in the site, they talk about they are the religion. And it's just reading really carefully what's really being said. So not just energy gateways, which that may actually be. I'll throw that back to you if you feel that's an energy gateway. But just gateways to agenda accomplishment, you know, accomplishing their agenda. I suppose in actuality, with everything being vibrating energy in the universe, it probably is an energy gateway even there.
Well, this is the, all right. So the programs that I've been playing this evening. Now, I don't know what your expression on this is, and what your opinion, your experience, or whatever on this. But from what I can understand, this goes back a long, long way. Hang on a second. Let's see how far back a long way it goes. Let's see if it does it go back this way, this far away. Yeah, a long, 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 long time ago. Good, I love that jingle, don't you? Anyway, let's go back. Let's go back even further. Hang on, take the time machine. We go back in the dreamland, and then see if do we have a place to land this? Yes, let's see if it's landing. Yeah, here we go. Here we go. Here we come. Okay, so we've arrived, right?
You know something, Jay? That sounded like the TARDIS landing.
That's right. That's right. We are now 50,000 years ago, or thereabouts.
Cool.
And this is a story that I was playing. This is from a tape by Michael Tesarian. Have you, Michael, heard of Michael Tesarian?
No, I'm sorry, I haven't, actually.
He's Irish Indian. Half Indian, half Irish. And he studied the ancient legends and myths of both sides and discovered common threads between them and discovered that they're both talking about the same thing, which is basically Atlantis. And that many people think that the Atlanteans went to Egypt and then spread out. But what he's saying is that the Atlanteans went to Ireland and then spread from there. And yeah, so, but here's the thing. It says that 50,000 years ago, there was a group of, genocidal, intergalactic mafiosi, let's say, who arrived here in our solar system. They put a decoy on the water planet Maldek, and then hid on planet Earth, and that there was another group who came after them, a sort of Keystone Cops intergalactic police force, who saw that there was a base on Maldek, so they destroyed Maldek, making an awful mess, creating the deluge. That's where all our water comes from, they didn't realize that it was on this planet, so they set up a quarantine around this world where it was discovered that there were that these people were on the planet. Have you heard of this story at all?
No, this is all new to me, but very fascinating.
All right. Okay, so they came from the future, right? just to make sense, to make it even more complete, they came from the future, they came through the sun as a wormhole. Right, the sun can be used as a time traveling portal. But you didn't know that. So
no,
anyway,
I didn't know that.
We've had a lot of solar flares in the last few days. Now,
right.
The story goes is that over the years they've been trying to find a way back out, because they're basically stuck on this planet with us, right? And we've been mutilated from the locals. Basically, they basically took the locals and reprogrammed them. That's us, that these are the powers that be, and their descendants. That they were these people in the beginning, There was a native population here, and they do their best to wipe that out, and we've seen the effects of that all over the world. And they have their mechanism, and they have their empire mechanism, it's kind of very plain to see. But what they're trying to do is to create a way out of this quarantine. This quarantine is a bubble that the Earth has been placed in all these years. And so that's why it's a kind of prison planet. It's not because it's because these people are in prison. We've fallen, you know, we've fallen victim to them in a way. And these are the powers that be. And these are the people that have become the bloodlines and the Illuminati, and they're kind of weird and misshapen, and they don't quite fit in with us, but they've kind of merged with us slightly, but they don't look weird, and so they hang around with big hats and stuff. This is the story so far. But the thing is, right, what they're trying to do is get off the planet, right? For that, they've had to basically educate so many thousands and thousands of humans in order to get them to create rocket science, so they can at least leave the Earth orbit. Yeah, see, they agree. They're kind of culminating in the kind of triumph of the space program by running up CERN to kind of cut a hole in this thing that they originally called the Stargate. Dun, dun, dun. Hang on, I've got a dun dun dun. Where's the dun dun dun? F8. Yeah. There. I'll say it again. The Stargate. So, I bet you didn't imagine you were going to do this afternoon.
No, but I'm having a really good time. I'm enjoying hearing the story. It's really fascinating, actually.
So, and you see, and this is such a big story because it happens so many thousands of years ago. Nobody can ever, you know, nobody could say, yeah, that's true or not true. But through various channels, this story has come to me, and it's like, oh, that makes a lot more sense. And there's these other stories that we hear. And if you think about, for instance, the story of Superman, you know, the original Superman film, that there were these criminals who were going around wreaking havoc, doing stuff, and they were sealed into this kind of glass dome thing, or glass crystal thing, weren't they?
Right.
So that's them being locked down onto the Earth.
Mm-hmm. Hey, that's really fascinating.
That's right. It's all... You see, because we've had a fragmented reality, the Earth is not a safe place. There's stuff going on in our galaxy all the time. I think what it is that these beings may have had some kind of high genetic bloodline or something like that. Some great thoughts and genius, but evil genius. Like a kind of mafia genius kind of thing. Being able to know magic, like conjuring magic, and as well as, ritual magic. They brought that with them and made us subject to it.
That's really fascinating. Of course, it must have gotten slightly contaminated along the way, because, like I said, the difference between the Illuminati and the Mafia, if you watch The Godfather, at least with the Mafia, you knew where he stood. At least they were honest with you.
That's right. Very, very honest killers. I do love an honest killer who says, I'm going to kill you. It's worse to have I'm not going to kill you, bam. You know, is that better, or is it like, yeah, I'm going to kill you, and then let you stew, and then you kill it? I don't know. Maybe I prefer the surprise one. What do you think? I don't know. What's kind of...
I drew two conclusions after while I was listening to that story. Two things came to mind. Is if the people from Atlantis actually went to Ireland, that would explain the green beer. And then the other thing would be... maybe that's where this story you just told me, it was news to me, but maybe that's where the Moody Blues got the title for the album, Days of Future Past.
I think the Moody Blues, they got some good mythology in there. There's another one. Is it Moody Blues or is it Deep Purple? That the Book of Taliesin.
What was that last part?
Taliesin. The Book of Taliesin. I don't know. Better check the chat.
Must have been Deep Purple. Yeah. I don't know of anything in Moody Blues. I know that when I first got introduced to them on the third album on their journey. With Justin and John and the band was on the threshold of a dream. And it was a really fascinating, story album. So that's what got me into them, those first seven albums being storybook albums. And I don't recall that. I know Asia did one off of the Ruby Art, but it must have been Deep Purple. I mean, I did follow a little bit of some of Deep Purple's work when Richie Blackmore led it, but I don't place that. So I'm learning all kinds of new things today from you, which is really good. I like that.
Yeah. So I mean, I think many people have got a slice, a kind of view into this enormous story. It's like we're in a. We might think that we're in a room, but actually we're in a room which is like the size of a lorry container, and it's inside this this auditorium, and then outside the auditorium is a stadium, right? And outside the stadium is a Super Bowl sized dome, all contained one within the other, and that's the story that we're given. You know, that there is actually an outside world somewhere that is not the, not the story.
The thing that comes to mind is Jim Carrey's movie, The Truman Show.
Yes.
I don't know if you've ever seen
that. Oh, yes. But, oh, yes. Exactly.
But that's a little bit like The Truman Show. It's like we're living in this little entity that is actually something, a part of a much bigger entity. And of course, when you consider, not just the solar system, but the galaxy and the galaxies and the universe and, the billions of stars and everything else, I mean, we're such a minute speck that it is. It's like being, as you said, in a room or in a matchbox inside of a room, inside of a mansion, inside of a stadium, inside of a, what have you. And, but I think that it does kind of go back to a little bit of like what Joe was saying, is if universally the possibility exists at all times, one time. And I always use the quote I tell people a lot, that when they're talking about manifesting and creating their own outcomes and whatnot, Jan and I always talk about, don't focus on the problem, focus on the solution. And also don't focus on money, because that actually pushes money away. And one of the things in that is, again, is being outcome-oriented, so that when you're looking at it and you're saying, I need a new house and a new car and a new this and a new that, instead of going, okay, well, my car's going to cost me $60,000, it becomes, how can I achieve this outcome? And then the first thing you know, somebody offers you a job and gives you a company car or whatever that solves several outcomes, and that vehicle being one of them. But also in that situation of the room, or being in a bigger perspective, I mean, this is something I've actually thought about. And of course, I'm constantly asking the divine, as I call it, the divine quantum universe. Some people might call it God by whatever name they choose, or, what have you. But, thing I constantly refer to, in those kind of situations, in my conversations with the divine quantum field, as it were, is to be treated to the joy of seeing the next level, as it were. And Jan and I talk about that quite a bit, as the fact that I'm sure it's no news to you, but there's all kinds of discussions out there in the scientific community, the philosophical community, and everything else about the fact that we live in a multidimensional universe, and we are limited to a 3D world here because of our five senses and whatnot, but that some people have said there's up to 50-some-odd dimensions. Jan and I have talked about how dramatically our life has shifted over the last few years, focusing on moving away, not moving away from, but moving into a new realm, a new reality, and it's almost like being in the fourth dimension. And I actually cited that on a blog I just wrote, because I did 30-some-odd years of police work, and as I said in that blog, police officers are extremely observant if you ever watch them. And I did volunteer police work here in America and in England, and police officers are extremely observant. But I was citing the example of, we have become so fourth-dimension oriented that it almost has created an invisibility. And when I say that, I cited the example of walking into a 7-Eleven convenience store here, and literally just inches from each of my shoulders had to walk through two sheriff's officers all decked out in their macho, you know, camo military gear, type super militarized police. And I know police work well enough to know that officers usually pay really close attention. And I walked right up to them and said, excuse me. They never missed even a tonality of their speech. They never broke eye contact. It was honestly, when I walked through them, it was like I was not even there. And when I came back out, I had already registered this, and I thought, this is extremely odd, because usually, not just even if they didn't want to acknowledge your presence, you still would see an indication or something of just checking you out. Or are you, or I'm pretty good at feeling the energy too of, you know, okay, who is this guy or what have you. But I walked through him and I turned around, got what I wanted, walked back through him, said, excuse me, walked back through him again. The second time, never broke even the tonality of their voice speaking to each other, never broke eye contact. It literally was like I didn't even exist going through there. And the naysayers could say, oh, well, you know, that's just a fluke. Those guys are just really focused on talking or whatnot. But if you ever rode 35 years or whatever in police cars and, you know, with sheriff's deputies and whatnot, it doesn't work that way. They don't do that. It just is not normal at all. So, you know, there is a much bigger thing going on than what we can comprehend. And that may well be why when we're born, that we are born with amnesia, to not know about past lives, to not know about our universal interaction, whether we were on Atlantis or on another star system or whatever. You know, it may be why we come in, because for the human mind, we only use 10% of it or so, and the rest is all running up there as a computer and maybe our internet linked to the galaxy or whatnot. But for the body and the vehicle the body is, it might just be sensory overload. If we came in with the power that we really hold all at once, we might self-destruct.
Well, there is always that danger. And, yeah, it may be that this thing can, you know, just be faded in gently. But I really think, you know, I'm listening to the shows that I did 2 years before 2012, in 2010. That's when I started doing this, because I knew there was a shift coming, and I knew 2012 had this thing about it. But it was just part of the natural process of me to start doing shows and to read people's soul energies and to get into that. And it gives you a kind of barometer of the pressure of soul energy and how the currents are moving of it. And so it's been fascinating to see the evolution, because you measure evolution by the soul energy, you see? The more people are on a certain ray, by the turning point of this, beyond the turning point of this, that's how fast the energy is moving. I don't know if that makes sense, but that's how I've been doing it. It's the only, you know, that's the only tool that I have. It's the only tool that I know, so that's all I've got. And so we're watching the tide move from a place of devotion and astralism to a place of a deliberate, conscious, self-evolving manifestation, recognizing your own divinity without having to have an antecedent, you know, and all the antecedents, you know, the Catholic Church and all, and money and kings and things like that, presidents, they're all trying to grab for that space, but it's not going to be there anymore because humans are evolving. We're all evolving beyond the need to have that, because the soul ray is changing to something that doesn't require that, something that just knows. Comments?
That is good news. That is very good news. I tend to definitely agree with you. I think there's a huge amount of evolution happening right now. And I made a comment earlier about, you know, some of the things that had happened in the last few days, and maybe it's just the Super Bowl dark energy around it or whatever. I made the comment about the fact that with this new Illuminati website going up, I'm not sure how new it is, but coming to light at least, and their quote-unquote TV commercial, which I've been watching that Super Bowl presentation just to see if during Super Bowl halftime, if that commercial actually ran, it would tell a big, big story. You know, with the energy and whatnot, I said that, you know, it, to me, it seems like the final battle, as Jan summed it up really well when she said, you know, that it feels like a last stand, a last ditch effort to maintain and keep the hooks in and the control. But, that's a lot of, you know, what I've been feeling lately as well. But it's something I said on a comment this morning. I think it was on Facebook. I put it that in a way, this is, sort of like we've reached the point now of the final battle between good and evil. And of course, to somebody reading that, they might think, oh, you know, well, this means a civil war, you know, where everybody takes up arms and regains their country, or, you know, whatever perspective. But I think really what I was trying to express was that it is in the final days of energy versus energy. And I think that the positive energy is starting now to move in the direction of slamming shut these gateways of that negative energy coming in, as we were talking about earlier. Nancy Hopkins actually put a comment up when I had put up a link to veteranstoday.com/, as a story about NORAD Space Command here in America doing all kinds of drills for Super Bowl terrorism and, you know, possible nuclear attack and everything else. And I was saying that the thing that is concerning about looking at something like that from an awareness standpoint is 7/7 bombings in London, the 9/11 bombings in America, the Boston Marathon, all of them always had all of these preparatory drills that were being done at the same time, which confused the issue of what was really happening, and it was exactly played out the way they were doing the drills for. And you start scratching your head and going, what's wrong with this picture? And I expressed concern over NORAD doing these drills, and then on that veteranstoday.com/Super Bowl, the guy explains all of the dark stuff behind the 33rd parallel and just on and on and on and on of all the reasons that this would become a massive satanic ritual, and that the possibility of this massive blood sacrifice and taking out Phoenix, Arizona and the Super Bowl. was quite likely a, you know, quite highly a possibility in his, this writer's opinion. And Nancy made the comment that due to the higher forces and beings, that all of the SDI weapons and energy weapons and nuclear weapons and everything had been disabled and dismantled, in their capability of actually, you know, working. And I had read that in a couple of, different ways. And of course, you know, I'm not at all against the idea of, you know, other entities, other beings and aliens or whatnot. We had Len Kitai, who did the documentary on the Phoenix Lights and witnessed the huge sighting in Phoenix, Arizona before at our festival. And Len, you know, really made an interesting presentation on that, not about aliens and UFOs and everything, even though it had all the documentation and what have you, in it about that. But what she was talking about was the spiritual aspects of what this really meant. And one of the things that really stuck with me when she said this, and of course, having done massive amounts of work in, my earlier days in the equipment business with the Pentagon and the black budget and black ops and what have you, where they were hiding equipment purchases and whatnot, it became really clear to me the deceit that was going on, you know, in the government and whatnot. So of course, when I look at something like that, I also know that everything we see is about 50 years behind America's military. Technology that's out there is awesome. I mean, awesome. And when I say that, I mean, I remember looking at F-16 fighters with particle beam weapons at the early stage of about 1981 or two, way before the Gulf War. Nobody would have ever believed there were particle beam weapons, and these F-16s had two seats in them, and that's why I found out why they had two seats in them, where it's only one pilot fighter plane. Was the second seat was for a weapons officer, because the weapons were Star Wars level. I mean, they were really Star Wars level stuff. And, you know, nobody knew about this stuff going on back then. Of course, you start seeing, you know, these things unfold. But with all of that, she was saying that these had all been disabled. Nancy had indicated that, which is actually huge good news, because if something were to happen, like at the Super Bowl, I mean, just the halftime show and ritualistic things happening is not good at all. But when they have blood sacrifices, as it were, for things like they created in 9/11 or in the 7/7 bombings in London, or even as simple as something like you're talking about setting the stage with celebrity this or whatnot, they create that energy that creates the possibility of all kinds of manifestation. And when I'm talking about all kinds of manifestation, you know, whether it's certain creating beings or manifestations people don't even realize are happening, the bottom line, and you may disagree with me on this, Jay, and I respect that if you do, but I think the bottom line is always comes out not in our best interest and not for the well-being of humanity.
We're being used, you know, we're like, just like Morpheus holds up that Duracell battery, you know, the copper top in the Matrix and says, mm-hmm. turn the human being into this. Well, they have turned the human race into a power generator that is attempting, as we speak, to open a portal that is their last chance in the last cycles of this solar cycle and all of the different things for them to go anywhere near home. And they're not going to do it because everybody's waiting for them. And they're going to try all sorts of things. But this is what CERN's about. This is what the Super Bowl's about. It's like their last chance to open that wormhole to get out of here. But, you know, everybody's waiting for them. So they're not going to escape this time. That's what seems to be happening. But the thing is that they have, now this is according to the guy Cobra, right? Have you come across Cobra? Bill? Are you muted? Well, anyway, Cobra is saying that they're blackmailing everybody with strange-lit bombs, which can basically take out more than the planet, more like several parts of this local solar system. Anyway, while we get Bill back and see what happens, here's Roger Waters out of Pink Floyd. The tide is turning. Oh, yes. The tide, it is indeed turning. Roger Waters. My guest and I are discussing the ritual that is in progress just now. As you speak, you could be watching it on TV, if you still have a TV. Yeah, hands up, who's still got a TV? Somebody has. Obviously the person that is calling you has got a TV, because... let's have a look. There's... So, yeah, I mean, this is the whole thing, you know. There's been always in this this thing about, well, one day there'll be a UFO above a stadium. You know, is this the day when they finally bring out the holographic fake UFO or the real craft with real Darman from Aldebaran, or the Pleiadians, or the bad greys, you know? What do you think they're going to try and pull out their big tricks today?
That's a really good question, Jay, because of course that's what the Veterans Today website was talking about. If they nuked the Super Bowl and blew Phoenix off the map, because it fits its location and the date and the timing. They had just dozens of reasons that this would become a massive blood sacrifice. By the same token, looking at the other possibility, as you said, you know, what would happen if the good guys, the bad guys, or whatever made an appearance. And I thought that was interesting, too, that they are playing in the Phoenix, where Len Kitai is from, who did the Phoenix Lights documentary. And that's where 10,000 people, of course, saw a massive, massive UFO craft. And as I was talking about earlier, having seen all kinds of bizarre military technology and things that the military does so far out in advance. Of course, when I see or hear the thing about alien crafts or whatnot, I don't discount the fact that that possibility and even the probability that that exists, but I also screen it against my knowledge of what the military uses, has, and what have you, just to say, now, is this actually a new weapon system or a new type of craft that's being tested by the military? I remember my dad, being a career military officer, swearing to me on, you know, his life that he had actually seen a flying disc, and this was back in the 60s, so that the military actually had and used, you know, like they would look just like what you'd call a flying saucer. However, Lynn Kitai, being in Phoenix, when she interviewed a lot of people for this movie, some that ended up, you know, being in an interview and some that didn't, the governor himself actually saw this craft. And she had the image of the lights, and actually had some images that she had shot with her camera of it. And with the description of the lights and the size of the craft and whatnot, I found it a little hard to just write it off as a military vessel, because the actual vehicle that went overhead was totally soundless, and was moving so slow that it would be very difficult without some type of anti-gravitational thing, which the military does have, don't get me wrong, but it was moving so slow, and she and the witnesses came to the conclusion that the craft was about 2 miles across. Now, 2 miles across a wingspan of a craft is absolutely enormous. I mean, that is huge. And of course, that was the whole point, is the craft was so huge that everybody was taken back by it. And the thing that caught me that I found most interesting was in, she said she had experienced it as well, but many people that she interviewed said when that craft passed overhead, they had the most overwhelming sense of peace and no fear or no reaction or anything, just like a real peaceful feeling. Now, I find that in that situation, I find, as a matter of personal opinion, that that would indicate to me that if it was interplanetary or intergalactic or whatever, visitors from elsewhere, that that particular craft probably was representing something that was non-hostile to create that sense of well-being.
Actually, this is a very interesting point. And I've had a gravitational scientist, well, he's more than that. He's worked in the military-industrial complex building, and he understands the understanding of gravity, and he says it's not anti-gravity. He says gravity is a wave. Okay? And what you're describing there is the benign feeling of being in a gravity wave. Is that the craft itself produces this feeling of slightly disoriented well-being.
Interesting.
That's what that's the feeling of gravity. It's not actually grave. It's gravity is a pressing down force, and we're pushed down from every black hole in the universe presses away from it with gravity, and that's what presses us down onto the surface of this planet. It's not like a sucking force. It's the other way around. And so these craft levitate because they also then push out, and they push out against the pushing down.
So what you're saying, let me just clarify, Jay, just out of curiosity, is the way you describe that, because of that gravity wave situation, a craft in that situation, hypothetically, could be either hostile or non-hostile, because even if it was hostile, just the propulsion system itself is creating that feeling of well-being, not necessarily the entities within it. Is that what, did I understand that correctly?
That's right. But we're still apparently, you know, not that I know anything, but we're still apparently working with a three-dimensional kind of concepts. The other beings, they have ships that aren't ships. They're creations of concept that manifest themselves as living entities that people walk around in. And when people step out of them, they get smaller. You know, weird stuff like that. You know, I've heard about these things. And those are the higher dimensional beings. And their ships are like light ships. Wow. And they... All right, yeah. I'm speaking to Alex Collier, right? The Andromedan contactee. And he's talking about... There are some ships that appear to be really small. And yet, when you walk into them, there's plenty of room. And he says that that's because...
It's like the TARDIS.
Yeah, and this is what I'm getting to. They're built in the fifth dimension. And they manifest in the third dimension as this small thing. And that's what the TARDIS is. It's a fifth dimensional vehicle. It's an organic... And that is why it can manifest as its own personality. It takes whatever material it is. It's like an ascended master. The TARDIS itself is an ascended master. It's not a machine.
That is really cool.
And it's a female.
That is really, really cool. I never even thought about it in that way. I mean, that perspective moves me a long ways from dealing with the perspective of Red Dwarf and Crichton trying to keep the guys all in line.
I Doctor Who is like... He's like Merlin, right? Have you noticed that Doctor Who's got younger and younger and younger over the years? That's what they say Merlin did.
Yeah.
Merlin was younger, and every time they saw him, because Merlin is a time traveler, he traveled backwards in time as he got older, because it was nicer. You know, he's like more and more nostalgic. Oh, God, I think I'll go back 1,000 years, because it was nicer then. Oh, maybe not. I'll go back 1,000 years. And that's why everybody saw them first as an old man and latest as a young man.
Oh, that sounds like Jan, because as soon as she turned 50, she started taking a year off each year in the birthday. Now she's down to her next one's going to be her 40th birthday. So, and she's looking better every year too. So, you know, that makes sense. I'm seeing that. I'm witnessing that firsthand. And, that does make sense. I also would just interject, not that the listeners are going to go crazy over this, but I had the good fortune of getting my two sons to 4, and one of my sons went to the 5th Doctor Who convention. So one of my boys has met 5 of the original Doctor Who's, and one of them has met 4 of them. And I will have to say, we had a real ball at all of those conventions.
excellent. I'm just getting a message from my friend Fee. She's saying about the cat one from New York. The cats in the hospital. The nurses that were cats. Do you remember that one? David Tennant and Rose episode.
Oh.
With the face of Bo.
I didn't see the David Tennant series. That one there.
Yeah.
I lost. I went with it all the way up through the 7th Doctor, I think it was. I think it was Colin Baker, maybe, that was the last one that I saw. Because I remember when we met him, I think that it was about that paths went in a different direction, and I didn't have a chance to watch him. I guess I'll have to catch up a little bit on Doctor Who. Jan subscribed to a thing on her Amazon Kindle where she's been each night presenting me an episode of Red Dwarf, so I'm going back through for 7 seasons of Red Dwarf right now. Maybe I'll have to move to Doctor Who after that.
We are. It's interesting because we this week I revived the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Did you ever see that?
Oh,
that?
Really?
I somehow, one of my friends, boodling around, and one of my friends dropped in the archive. Somebody had got the original tapes from the 1970s series recorded off the radio, and prepared them as MP3s. And they're all a bit higgledy-piggledy sound-wise. So what I did is I've tidied them up even further and normalized them all. And compress them all, and so they're all a good volume now. So they're all available. If anybody wants them, I can make them available from the Wall Street Radio website. It's the first two original radio series where they actually were just making it up as they went along. The first series, anyway, and they just jammed it, and it's genius. It's comedic genius. So, but the thing is, what we're finding out now is that all of these series, like Doctor Who, Star Trek, for instance, and, you know, the idea of a Starfleet and all of these things, and a space program that isn't like rockets, that is like, you know, star drives, that actually seems to have been a real thing. And now we're getting disclosure from these guys like Captain K, you know, Randy Kramer, who they call Captain K, right? Which Captain K do we know? Captain Kirk, you know? That this guy is essentially Captain Kirk. But it's even more like a cross between Star Trek and Stargate, because in Stargate they have teleportation technology as well, wormhole technologies. As well as star drives, you know, which is apparently what we have. We've got all that stuff. But we were talking about... Go ahead, Bill.
I was going to say, it's kind of like when that officer where they built the F-16s took me back and to the secondary flight assembly line and was showing me the two-seater F-16 and was showing me the fact that it had... this particle beam weapon on it. And, you know, that was like so much science fiction at the time. But again, all of these things, as you said, are unfolding, and it's becoming more than when we went to see, we actually went to one Star Trek convention, and I have to give you a chuckle here, Jay. Jonathan Frakes was there, the right-hand man for Jean-Luc Picard, Patrick Stewart.
Right.
And the audience was very fascinated by Patrick Stewart. Of course, he wasn't there. And one of the people held up their hands and said, Jonathan, what's it like to work with Patrick Stewart, you know, the legend Patrick Stewart? And Jonathan started rocking back and forth side to side in his chair. And he said, well, it's kind of like this, you know. When we're in a big battle scene with the Klingons, he said, we're actually rocking in our chairs, and of course they're rocking the cameras to create the effect that the ship's under attack and what have you. And he says, and while all this is going on, Patrick Stewart is in his chair under his breath saying to me, Jonathan, 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 all those years at the Royal Shakespearean Theater for this. I love
That's
that.
Right, the great oratorial, and there they are rocking from side to side in their chairs. That's it. That's it. That's the way.
But you're absolutely right. I mean, that's kind of what we see is a sort of on what you're talking about. It's sort of the upside of what we're seeing. You know, the downside of it is as I said, is some of the things we see. Is one of the things that has been commented on many times is the Illuminati has such an arrogant ego, it's like so arrogant that it shows us what's going to happen in movies. And we're seeing sort of the positive side because, like Star Trek and whatnot, we're seeing technologies that exist. I mean, when the flip phones came out, that was my first thing. When the phones came out that flipped down and flip them down open like that, I was like, well, I wasn't a big Trekkie, but I was like, well, I've seen that on Star Trek.
Yeah, and how long was it before you stopped going psh, 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 when you opened it?
yeah, exactly. And then, of course, too, I remember being at the Hemisphere in San Antonio, Texas, and I can't remember where the other one was. I think the World's Fair might have been going on in Washington at the time, and I was at the Hemisphere, but one of the exhibits I went through was AT&T telephone company. Had a phone hooked up with a video phone, and we were talking to people up at the World's Fair on the video phone, and they were talking back, and of course I was way back there long before Skype video and all of this stuff existed. And you know, everybody was like, wow, I can't believe this is out there. And it was a little while, of course, before we actually saw it, but there's so much, you know, going on. When I was in the real estate business, I had a partner in California, and he brought some software in that he'd created. I was still, I mean, the computers at that stage, it was probably, 86, maybe 87. I can't remember the exact dates, but, he brought some software in, loaded it up. My little screen had MS-DOS on it. You know, I had to type in the DOS commands and everything, but he had this thing called TrayNet, and he showed me what to do and how to do it, and Larry and his partner Fred came up. Interestingly, Fred was a professional football player while we're on the internet. He played for the Miami Dolphins, but and before he retired and became Ken's partner. But anyway, he had them sending messages back and forth to me, which was effectively email. And it was on the old DOS screen computers. I didn't even know what the internet was. You know, I mean, it was just the very, very early edge of it. But when you see stuff like that, even the Star Trek stuff, I know now from the things I've seen and how far the military is ahead and whatever, I look at stuff and
oh god, hang on a second. We'll try and get Bill back in a second. Looks like my computer's crashed a little bit for a second, but I'm sure he'll be back online, or I'll be back online, or we'll get him back as soon as we can. There we go. Bill, you're back.
Yeah,
sorry, that was my...
I had lost you there for a minute.
Yes, you did. But, yeah, so this is fascinating. I can't remember where you were, though.
Well, I was just saying that, you know, so much of it we see has existed so far ahead. I was just citing the example of the AT&T phone conversation by video phone a good 10, 15 years in advance. And, of course, seeing us using email and in real estate transactions, effectively the same thing as email in the mid, probably 86, 87. And, of course, the Internet as such and knowledge of email and all came in more in the 90s, but it was all out there. So,
well, actually, I was there at the beginning with email. I was working in the university in the computer department, and I was one of the first email post. That sounds weird, but I was one of the first email postmasters on the planet, because it was the Joint Academic Network, which was called JANET, which joined with the Academic Research Program in America, which is ARPANET, which then became DARPANET, which became the Internet eventually. Yeah, oh my. Mm-hmm. That's my kettle in the background. I don't know if you can hear it. And
so actually, that means you're a part. You're one of your previous incarnations. Then was as Benjamin Franklin, then the first Postmaster General of America.
Yeah, I was Postmaster specific. E-Postmaster, but it was quite interesting. You know, I figured out. You know, the Internet. I know from personal experience that you cannot be not traced. You can't go anonymous. If somebody wants to find you, somebody can find you. If I wanted to find anybody, I could find them, no problem.
Oh yeah, absolutely. When Jan and I are doing Skype calls or talking to somebody and we're having trouble with a Skype connection or something, it's really funny. This has happened multiple times. I've leaned over and said, okay, NSA, we know you're listening in. We don't mind you listening. We hope you enjoy our conversation. But would you please just shut your microphones off so we don't have the feedback we're experiencing? And the feedback always stops instantly. I mean, it just goes away. And the thing I always tell people is, like, isn't it worrying, some of the things you say, or, you know, whatever, you know, with the NSA listening in and FBI and CIA and the PTA and, you know, whatever, listening in. And I said, you know, having done 30 to 40 years, whatever it's been now, police work riding around, I said, a friend of mine showed me something so long ago, long, long ago, 25, 30 years ago. He showed me a thing called the big ear where they pull up in front and it looked like a little satellite. He just pointed at the windows of the house, put some headphones on and listened to everything he said, listened to it right to the letter. And I just told him, I said, as soon as I saw that, and then of course more and more unfolding, I said, every single thing you do say, no, whatever, is known. Believe me, don't worry about it. You know, because if you're going to get caught up in that, you're going to just spend your whole life worried about something that's just going to be creating more problems rather than solutions.
Well, you see, my attitude towards that, Bill, is right. Okay, if they're listening, they're going to get a learning. So I do my best to stuff as much truth in my head as possible. And as much love in my heart as possible, and they can take whatever they like, because there's plenty to go around, and it'll do them good, but it might get them the sack. Ha ha! That's the thing. If you start listening to somebody telling the truth, it'll go in, and your heart will respond, and you will either die or you will transition, you know. Well,
or you move to Russia like Eric Snowden did, because you realize that you've been on the wrong side of the fence. Because, as you said, the heart knows the right, you know, outcome all the time. So Eric just packed up and said, enough of this, I'm gone.
That's right. Worth camping out in the airport until I give you a flat, you know. That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, well, we're in our places, you know. I think here we are. We're in the grandstand. This is the time that we've been waiting for, I believe. You know, right now, this evening, this moment, we're watching the last. This is the last one. What can they do that's going to be even bigger than this? There are rumors that they're going to nuke it. That means that they can't nuke it. Right? They can't do anything that anybody is expecting. If somebody's put it down on paper, somebody said it on the air, they can't do it. It breaks the magic.
Sure.
So
right.
if we can get
the spell.
That's right. So if we can break as many spells as we can this evening, before anything happens, if we say that, you know, for instance, Katy Perry is going to do something that makes everybody feel weird or awkward, that's going to be part of the spell. What happens after that? Does Katy have now? Here we are. Let's just have a quick look at the symbolism and see. Have a look. The quick duh moment, right? Here we are, Phoenix, Arizona, right? Phoenix, the famous bird, legendary bird that burns itself up and is reborn, right? Phoenix mm-hmm. is the symbol of Aquarius. This is the beginning of the Aquarius age, so this is an avataric moment that is the beginning. 2015, we're definitely in the 21st century. It's like the big moment, the sun is doing its solar flares three a day for the last week. Everything's leading up to a big kind of climactic moment. And is Katy Perry going to be the spearhead of this climactic moment, or will she suddenly start thinking about her cats? I don't know. Halfway through the performance.
Well, that's an interesting point. What would be really cool is if just an alien ship came down and she just beamed off a stage and got carried off. And then everybody could wonder what that was all about.
That would be a finale.
Yeah, that would be a great promotional thing. By Pepsi Cola would probably make it into a commercial, but since they're sponsoring this Super Bowl, and of course, that's another thing about, you know, the awareness and generations is if people look at what Pepsi Cola is putting in their drinks and their diet drinks and whatnot, they'd realize that that was not a good thing either.
They've had some bad publicity this year. You know, there's been a bit of bad publicity for a lot of these corporations who have, you know, they're being found out. It's them that's making us ill. And how come they're making us ill? Oh, they're feeding us plastic. All right, that's good. They're feeding us oil, petroleum products, because they've got nothing else to do with them. You know, oh, well, let's stick it in food. They won't notice. Anyway, it's good
everything. In here in the States is really becoming, of course, over here we use it, we've actually told the ranch owners here that we absolutely boycott, ban, create no use of Roundup weed killer, but Monsanto, that made Agent Orange and DDT and all kinds of other poisons, has now been called out, and their sales are plummeting by the millions, and they're, you know, really, and there's this millions march against Monsanto that is now up in the millions of people, and Jan's getting me some t-shirts that, you know, have come out now, boycott Monsanto, and the awareness level of that, but it goes way beyond that. You know, Pepsi Cola, it's Coca Cola, it's Kellogg's cereal company that has been, and now General Mills, one of the biggest food producers, has been lying, outright lying on their labeling of what's in their foods, and they've been caught out on it. And so, you know, more and more people are becoming consciously aware, and by consciously aware, instead of reactionary reaction to things, they're not going in and saying, well, we're going to burn down the General Mills plants or the Kellogg's plants or whatever. But what they're doing is they're saying, we are not going to invest our dollars in a company that's trying to kill us off. And, of course, those stocks are plummeting. The shareholders are screaming. And as I say, you know, the conscious awareness is creating change, because they will either change or die. And if they go out of business, it will just create space for someone who can bring a conscious business in, whose agenda is not to follow the Georgia Stones and try to reduce the planet population down to 500 million. And those things are all starting to happen now. And I can't help but believe, I have to say, I mean, anybody in the egoic programmed world that is sitting watching the Super Bowl and going, hand me another beer and I don't care if we drop bombs on Syria or whatever type attitude, you know, would just look at me like I'm a nutcase. But I can't help but believe somewhere in between the divine quantum universe, something bigger consciousness, to alien forces that are out there, to just internal inside of our head consciousness or whatever, there is a massive energy shift. And I think this past year, what you're talking about, I'm pretty sure you'd agree with me on this one, we're starting to see a reaction out of these big corporations and out of the Illuminati, quote unquote, or the Bilderberg Group, or, you know, any of these really negative forces that are, you know, perpetuating, feeding off negative energy. I really believe we're starting to see them react much like a animal, a wild animal backed into a corner that's afraid. And their own perpetuation of fear is now starting to prey upon them themselves. And they're really getting to be almost reactionary to, you know, I think that when I read that website, it was, I agreed with Jan totally. It was like, these people are in a desperate last ditch thing to sell this. You know, it's like, hey, we gotta put a spin on this that everybody buys and believes to make it sound like it's good before we lose our grip totally. But the thing is, I mean, There's always great lines in movies, but when Princess Leia said to Darth Vader, the tighter you squeeze, the more star systems will slip through your fingers. I mean, that's a very true statement about anything. Anything you squeeze hard is going to slip through your fingers.
Especially if it's mercurial.
Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely. So here we are at this crossroads. I mean, whether it's today, this is what I'm, the feeling that I'm getting is that they're trying to open an enormous portal so that they can escape. They can get their little buggies and ships and all try and squeeze out through the little hole that this ceremony makes. But, like I said, they're going to try and do that. And they may have plans that if it doesn't work, that other things might happen, like a nuclear weapon, you know, that sort of idea. You know, let us go or we'll bomb the thing. Which I'm sure will also be, you know, is another another one of their tactics of blackmail and... what's that thing? It is blackmail, when you threaten to blow something up, threaten to hurt your people. Anyway.
Yeah.
But sometimes I just don't remember the words for things. Anyway... It's because I don't think these things, you know, I'm not thinking about these things all the time. Anyway, meanwhile, that they have holding at ransom hostiles, holding where, you know, we're being held hostage, and you know, let us go or we'll blow the place up. But they know that that's a kind of a really last ditch attempt, and rather stupid, because they'll blow themselves up as well.
Yeah, and there is, a very good point there with, for example, in 9/11. I mean, when Hitler said the bigger the lie and the greater the catastrophe you create, the bigger the lie you can convince people of. I mean, 9/11 was a classic example of that one. I mean, when World Trade Center 7 went down, anybody who has ever seen a controlled demolition or bothered to take the time to watch a video of a controlled demolition could sit there and go, wait a minute, that building didn't have an airplane crash in it. That building didn't just fall down. That building was blown up. And then, of course, when they play back the videos of the other buildings going up and saying, hey, wait a minute, these buildings were blown up, and then start putting together things like with World Trade Center 7, having all the records of all the criminal activity of the Illuminati and whatnot that was under a Justice Department investigation at the time, and the big bank gangsters and whatnot. It was like, oh, wow, you know, this is fantastic. You know, here's a great opportunity to both start a war for money and to eliminate all the evidence. Back then, you know, it was a perfect example of being able to manipulate the system. But because of the time and evolution and the awareness and the consciousness raising and the conscious awareness raising, and also I think more and more people saying, hey, we're not going to take it anymore, in the words of the WHO. You know, we're not going to take it anymore. We know what you're up to. We know the false flags. And we just aren't going to buy into this system anymore. It creates a, you know, they're trying to open a gateway. And in effect, it's kind of like a camera lens, you know, opening and closing the shutter, the lens on it. When it's closing in, it's like they were opening it wider and wider, building to this event, Super Bowl, which, you know, as they say, until that lady sings, and the Super Bowl's not over, and we haven't seen the outcome of it yet today. But one thing about it, if they do anything like they said, and if the galactic helpers and whatnot don't have nuclear weapons disabled, or even if just Katy Perry's appearance creates an opening, anything that's going on from Katy Perry to some catastrophic event, anything that's going on is certainly trying to open that shutter lens to the maximum, but it's working against a shutter lens being closed all the way. And there's no possible way that they're going to be able to achieve the maximum outcome and result. And quite possibly that in itself may help create the energy, the knowledge of that in itself, and the feeling of that in itself with such a wide range of people around the planet may help create enough of the closure on it where it's like, this just isn't going to work at all. And that's like, you know, there's been a lot of discussion I've seen on the internet about the intergalactics and aliens and whatnot shutting down all the nuclear weapon systems. I do know over in England, when the alien ships are flown over, from reading everything from Jenny Randall's books to talking with military officials here in the U.S. when, you know, I was doing that and all of that, the unidentified crafts, whatever they were, that were flying over some of the bases there in England, actually were shutting down weapon systems. And I heard that from so many different sources and such high reliability of sources that I can't even begin to remember where. That's the joy of being 63. You know, you don't remember. And secondly, you don't give a damn if you remember or not. But I do know that those things, you know, can very well be happening. But I also, from a quantum physics standpoint, and I'm sure with your intellect, you probably appreciate this, I also know that this conscious awareness creates such a strong energy that it's quite possible that we're creating things that most people, human level, can't even comprehend. You know, it's kind of like watching somebody levitate something, or the chap in England who can manifest jewelry in his hand because he's so highly evolved in his consciousness and actually manifest instantly. And knowing that Jan and I have manifested things really, really, really fast, and in Jan's case, manifesting a $50 bill in less than 20 minutes, you know, has really proven to me that there is a quantum power that is so far beyond human capability of comprehension. You can kind of get an idea of what's going on, but you really don't know the total aspects of it. And it's kind of like somebody saying, oh, I got caught in a traffic jam or whatnot, and you know, then I missed my flight, and that flight later crashes or something, and you go, well, wait a minute, you know, was that coincidence or was that some power that was I don't, you know, realize or know about? That's a little bit out there trying to define that.
Yeah, that's causality. That comes under the general heading of causality, mine or yours. So we have all these realities, right? So where I was getting to is that I started these shows in 2010, right? And when I did them, I could feel, you know, I have a sense of things, you know, it's an inner sense, but it's a sense of like what people are hearing when I'm doing this live. And there's a sense of like sometimes it's resistant, sometimes things go wrong, sometimes it's just like a nice sailing on a pond, sometimes it's going across rough seas, and things crash and lines drop and all sorts of things happen. But you know, there are times when you're on it and there's nothing you can nothing will stop you because you're so aligned with the truth. And right now this feels like the correct seem to be mining at the moment, which is that we can create our new reality, right? And we create the reality where there was no shock and awe at the Super Bowl. And the reality is that the powers that be were thwarted in all of their nasty little plans, and some poor young singer sang a really lame song, and everybody thought how lame that was, and that wasn't very special at all. And then somebody saw the rest of a football game, and then everybody enjoyed themselves, and you know, and it was, it's like there's a thing about deflated footballs at the moment, isn't there?
Yeah, and I was just telling Dan, the singer Charlie Daniels of the Charlie Daniels Band said, if you want to debate deflated balls, all you need to do is go to Washington, D.C.
And I have to thank Charlie Daniels because the first time I learned anything about the guitar was on the Charlie Daniels How to Play Finger Chicken Picking Blues thing. It was Charlie Daniels who taught me how to play guitar, first of all. You know, then I had other people, but, you know, Charlie Daniels was the first. He was my first. So I like Charlie. He was a good man. And he's still alive. That's excellent.
Yeah, indeed. And, you know, I think that one of the things you were talking about you know, and nothing happens and we are creating and sending energy and whatnot, I'd like to just cite an example right quick. When we first came to this ranch, this facility that we work on is owned by some people where there's more money than probably, I don't mean to sound judgmental, but more money than sense. It's not always used in the wisest way. But there's also, money is no object and what have you, but there's also a situation that we observe very quickly that money can't buy happiness. Now, I've had times when I had more money than I could spend, and I've also gone through times where I didn't know where the next penny was coming from, and I always found that the greatest joy and the greatest fun and the greatest adventure and all everything was more in the challenge than having just more than I could figure out how to spend. However, having said that, there is a lot of joy in becoming conscious and knowing how to use, you know, resources, not just money, but resources in the right way. And one of the things that I had as part of my learning journey coming here, was that it worked out perfect in a sense, but I had not evolved enough past my ego and evolved enough in my gratitude standing to realize that Jan and I decided, well, where we were at the time, we needed to manifest enough income to take care of our horses in England. We needed a permanent home because we'd moved from the festival where we presented in Colorado down to Texas. And we'd sold our vehicle, so we needed a vehicle, a house, needed an income enough to feed the dogs and the horses, etc. And we very quickly manifested that. However, when I came in, instead of looking at it and saying, we've got about a $350,000 house or whatever, beautiful custom new home, given a car, given expenses, given this and the other, I looked and picked apart everything that was wrong, including the tremendous negativity and dark energy and everything that was wrong with the way the owners did things and what have you. Thankfully, they were patient enough to let me outgrow my ego and do the journey the divine had sent me here on to learn and to move myself per path. That learning was greatly enhanced by Jan making a statement maybe 6-7 months ago, but I had had a challenge or been challenged on something, and I was like, oh God, here they go again type thing. And Jan said, you know what? And she really brought a point. And I think the same thing applies to the Super Bowl, the Illuminati, the dark aliens, whatever it is. She said, send love. She didn't verbalize it, but of course we all know there is nothing more powerful in the universe than love itself. And as a core. And she said, you know, send love. And I started focusing, concentrating on the fact that when something was challenging or when Katy Perry sings a really lame song, I don't even know what Katy Perry sings. I have no idea. I don't have any interest in her. But when something like that happens, looking at it and saying, you know what? Just send love and send love. The transformation in this place and in the owners and in their attitudes and everything could have been totally coincident. I say it might not have been just coincidental, but it was like walking out of the darkness into the light. I mean, it was like night and day difference. And that is a little bit why I was excited when you invited me to come on the show, because A, your listeners are, who are doing this rather than watching the Super Bowl, have a distraction from this ritualistic thing. B, anybody that listens to it after the fact can raise their awareness and say, you know, wow, you know, I never thought about some of these perspectives they're saying. But at the end of the day, whatever is going on, you know, a football player that gets mad and, you know, kicks another one,
Oops. Maybe we have to wait a second. There we go. We seem to have lost Bill just for a second there. So yes, everything's starting to blow up a bit as the winds pick up in speed. We will see what happens over the next few hours. Tomorrow night I'll be speaking with Katie Galanti on Journeys with JP, either a pre-record segment or live on the air, and we'll dissect the mid thing. What do you call it? Mid-game? There we go. Are you back, Bill?
Yeah, I think the NSA shut me off again. I heard my phone vibrate. I think they shut me off again. But the bottom line was, is sending love, because it's like a tidal wave that drowns any of that negativity. I mean, where they're sending fear to, or these ritualistic symbolisms or what have you. Just, you know, it's kind of like Captain Kirk and Captain Picard and all of them said on Star Trek is, you know, shields up and just fire back with sending love, because there's nothing more powerful than love.
Well, actually, do you know, like we were saying before, gravity is a feeling, gives you actually a sense of well-being. It's the opposite of terrifying. And indeed, if we can send a form of gratitude, if we can express gratitude, you know, that's what I've been trying to do, because I know that there's been a lot of negativity around, and, you know, people are feeling very glum, and, you know, obviously the weather's terrible, and, you know, everybody's short of money, and there's all these different excuses we can have for drama, but I've got the right to be in this bad mood, right? Because this, that, or the other, you know?
Mm-hmm.
We all have our excuses, but it's like paramount right now. It's paramount, not paramint. That sounds like a disinfectant. It's paramount at this moment to remain in the loving space. Now, what does that mean? It doesn't mean that you have to go around kissing everybody or being nice, but it means being able to be in the space of the moment and being able to respond appropriately to whatever happens to the moment. Oh yeah, I'm responding. That sounds just like a drill, right? It sounds like a dentist drill. Amazing. Anyway,
right. So, that's very true. That's very true, because you know, by being in the present moment and looking at it and saying, you know, it's almost like, you know, You almost in that gratitude mode, if people would just stop, take a deep breath and go, I just took a deep breath. I'm still alive. You know, I'm where I am, and I'm not being run over by a bus. I'm not falling out of an airplane head first. There's a lot of things that could be happening at the moment. No matter what, I'm alive, and every new moment is just like a new day. It's a new opportunity every single moment. And, as you said, you know, it's if Katy Perry does a horrible job, and you know, there'll be people who will just talk about that until the cows come home on Facebook and the internet and everything else. Oh, what a horrible job, or what a brilliant job, or whatever it is. But if they just looked at it in the present moment and said, well, I'm grateful I'm breathing, and I'm grateful the next moment's going to bring something new, and I'm sending love to the people, whether they're doing ritualistic stuff or whatnot. I'm just putting my shields up and moving on, grateful in the present moment. It's really, really easy. And I mean, I would challenge any listener to walk in the front door and sit down right here on the couch with me and just follow Jan and I around for a week. And they would see how easy it is to just move into a whole nother dimension, to where all of this stuff around you is sort of like, it's almost like seeing something out of the corner of your eye, and you vaguely know it's there, but it just has nothing to do with you. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Well, this is the, it's being, from our, the similes that we've built up, the metaphors we've built up this evening, it's like being able to step outside of the matchbox, outside of the room, walk outside of the building, into this, you know, the ever larger buildings, until you step out of all the buildings into the wide open space, fresh air, where everything is back to where it should be. Perhaps if we...
Kind of like Jim Carrey walking through that door in the Truman Show.
That's right, exactly. Exactly. So as we go through these more and more doors until we finally get to the open space, and we take a deep breath and give thanks that we're here and we can see the big picture, and that. Essentially, the beings, they're all dead now, but their families are the people that we call the powers that be. and they're still wreaking havoc, and things need to be repaired, and we need to get back our large consciousness. So, Bill, if you're still here, are you there with me?
I'm still here.
Thank you, my friend. We're going to be leaving Ever Beyond and going on to a recorded version of Healings and Meditations, because, indeed, Frank is watching the Super Bowl. So he's not doing his healing show tonight. So thank you very much. Do you have a website we can publicize right now?
Sure. Jay, Jan and I both are at asmilingworld.com. And Jan is a wizard at helping people, you know, move along their life's path journey, and we welcome you to come by. We've got a lot of interesting information up there, and we believe strongly in the fact that we do have a lot of stuff of value, but we don't ask people to come in and say, well, I'm broke, I don't have a job, I can't afford to get any help or what have you, because we operate on a give what you can, where you can, when you can basis. It's highly valuable information, and we do expect some kind of energy exchange but that energy exchange can be done in a lot of ways. The important thing is getting people moved out of this fear-based world. So that's asmilingworld.com, and we welcome everybody.
Bill Moore, thank you very much. This has been Ever Beyond, Beyond, Beyond. Good night, everybody.